and welcome to the program. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Live from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. And we have a guest on tonight. I've got him on the line here. Before he comes on, let me just briefly introduce him to you. His name is Gary Byrne, and he wrote a book, Crisis of Character. And he's been on a lot of shows, and you may have heard from him. But I've got some very specific questions to ask him because, well, let me get Gary on the line. Gary, are you here? Can we get Gary on the line?
I'm here.
Gary, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for making time for us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Now, I know you met a lot of people in Cleveland, but I had a minute to meet with you and talk to you when we were both at the convention. Did you have a good time at that?
I did. It was a great experience to experience it from the inside as opposed to working the outside when I was in the Secret Service.
So you're in the Secret Service, you're going to this convention, you know, obviously that event is entirely orchestrated by the Secret Service and other law enforcement. Are you looking at it and going, are you just looking at all those agents going, I'm really glad I'm not working this event?
Well, I don't know, it was good to see my fellow uniform division officers. You know, it was weird looking at it from the other side. But I was grateful they were there, and they were kind to me. It was good.
No, I bet. So let me tell you, we got less than a week to go to the election. And I'll tell you what, you know, besides the book, and I want to get into it because I read it.
Sure.
I read it in July. It's an excellent read, and we'll go through it. But, you know, besides the book, you of course, you, sir, have a unique perspective, which I think is especially relevant today, now, because we're less than 7 days from the election. And as far as I know, you're the only person I will ever talk to, I think, that it was this close to the Clintons and can give us, I think, some degree of insight into Hillary. And I want to talk to you about that. So with that, let me, you know, when you wrote the book, how long were you in the White House? How long were you there?
I was in the Secret Service Uniform Division for 12 years. Although I had other assignments, like at the training center a couple miles away, I always worked back at the White House on the weekends. I worked continuously there for about 8 years.
And that was, so your service in the White House in the uniform division, that predated the Clinton presidency, right?
It did. I started there in 91 with Papa Bush, and I stayed until 2003 with Sunbush.
And so, right, and so now, and explain to the listeners, because I think a lot of people think of the Secret Service, they see agents, you know, they've got the dark suit,
right,
the tie, the gun, you know, but what's the difference between being an agent and being an officer in the uniform division?
Sure, so the agents are the people that run the Secret Service, like you said, you know, in the suits with the earpieces. They're also federal investigators, and their main priority, also, besides protection of the president, is protection of our money, our currency. They do counterfeit and fraud investigation. But at the White House, they're in charge of the security. And then the uniform division does most everything else. And what I mean by that is they do the metal detectors for the president and the vice president. They do the bomb-sniffing canine dogs. They do the counter-sniper officers on the roofs and in higher places when the president travels. They also do the local Secret Service crime scene investigation in Washington around the White House.
So guys do all the heavy lifting, right?
sort of, yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, you know, and they also do all the hell. The uniform division is also all the fixed posts around the White House and the vice president residence, and also internally. And, of course, my post, which I ended up kind of becoming famous for, was outside the Oval Office. I was there for 3 years.
So now tell me, because what a lot of people who are critical of what you write in the book,
sure,
what they will say is they talk about how there's no way that you could have seen what you saw as a uniformed officer. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So the first thing you need to know about me is your listeners need to know about me is I'm the first employee in the history of the Secret Service to ever be compelled to testify against a sitting president in a criminal law case, and that was the Monica Lewinsky case. I was subpoenaed right. six times. And then I was eventually ordered to testify by the Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist or go to jail. So when people say that, you know, I couldn't have saw what I saw, I wish they were around when the subpoenas were flying, because that would have been great. The truth of the matter is that the Secret Service agents retired, the Retired Secret Service Agents Association that has come out and slandered me. They're trying to make it look like that they controlled everything in the White House. That's really not the honest truth. The truth is the Uniforms Division has been holding those posts internally in the White House and externally for over 75 years. So I saw what I saw. I experienced what I experienced, and that was my life. You know, many people, quite a few Secret Service agents over the years have written books, and the Retired Agents Association has never come out and slandered them. It's only when a Uniform Division officer comes out and tells.
And why is that? I mean, explain that to me. Is that like a rivalry between the two sides of the Secret Service?
It is. You know, it's almost like a bigotry with them, to be honest with you. It really is.
Are you the basket of deplorables then in the U.S. Secret Service?
Yes, I was. Yeah, absolutely. So you know, they actually get to the point where, you know, years ago when I first came on, there was a lot of tension between the agents and the officers because the Uniform Division was tired of being treated very poorly. And at one time, they used to put us in these crappy hotels, and the agents stayed in the Marriott and the Sheraton. And then we complained, and actually it blew up in their faces one time. They put us up in this really bad hotel, and 8 Uniform Division officers ended up in the hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning, and that kind of blew the lid off it. Yeah, so we ended up suing, and, you know.
That totally reminds me of Cleveland, by the way, because I stayed in, I don't know about you, but in Cleveland, I literally stayed in a murder motel. I mean, I had blood splatter on my wall. But the joke, of course, was I survived it. And you know all the California delegates?
Yeah.
Remember what happened to them? They all went to a fancy resort, and they came down with some virus, some norovirus, wiped half of them out. So I know. We lived that, you know, back in Cleveland. So look, just for people who are just tuning in, I'm talking to Gary Byrne, retired U.S. Secret Service officer in the Uniform Division, wrote a book, was there in the Clinton White House, and we're just talking now about your point of view, right? Because where were you physically in the White House? And you were telling me how you're stationed right outside the Oval Office. I don't mean to press the issue, but I just want I've never been to the White House. Most people listening, I'm pretty sure, have never been to the White House. From your station where you are standing, where they've put you, and by the way, I read in the book, you have to stand in place, right? You are, and it's like your whole shift, you basically have to stay there, right? I mean, is that how that works?
Eight hours. And you had two people, myself and another officer, and we rotated hour on, hour off, and they allowed you to work out at times, but you also had different responsibilities.
The quick question I have then is, when you're standing outside the door, is that the only door in and out of the Oval Office?
No, that's the thing. That post that when an officer stands that post, the reason he's there is because that's where the alarms are for everything else.
Got it.
All the other ways you can access the president when he's in there, all the alarms go there. And they also go to the control center, and we have a couple different ways to transmit back and forth from the control center. So they and us know, the post standers right there know exactly what's going on every second if something goes wrong.
Got it. And so from that door now, is that generally the door that visitors come to the Oval Office?
No.
The one that you're standing by?
No, that's generally the door, the next one down, the secretary's office. So when the president's in there, there'll be an agent outside the secretary's office. There'll be an agent at the Oval Office door where I am. And then my post moves back and forth when they're there. When they're not there, when the president moves, then the uniform division officer basically opens the office up.
Just to clarify this for the listeners, it's a big deal.
Sure.
This questioning is important because
So
many people have tried to say you could not have seen what you saw, and yet from your post, you were that's the nervous center of the executive mansion. I mean, that's you're seeing the comings and goings of people in and out of those corridors. I mean,
we saw many things. Absolutely, everybody passed. Let me put it to you to give you some more perspective. I'm suing Media Matters, David Brock, and the retired Secret Service Agents Association for slander. And just to give you an idea, eventually when we file the suit after the election, as we move forward here, I'm going to tell you who my witnesses are. My witness list is Bill and Hillary Clinton, Leon Panetta, George Stephanopoulos, Rahm Emanuel, John Podesta, who's running her campaign.
Well, I was going to ask you about him. I was actually going to ask you about him.
Listen, that's why I laughed when the book first came out, and they're like, he couldn't have saw. Listen, Podesta and Jennifer Palmieri know exactly what I saw. Jennifer Palmieri was Leon Panetta, the chief of staff's assistant.
By the way, if I can interject, Gary, Palmieri is the gal whose emails are all over this hack. So if you've been, you know, if you're listening, you've been watching these Podesta emails and you've been reading them. Jennifer Palmieri is the gal. She's his like number one correspondent. So she's all over this. I'm sure you've been following that story closely.
I have. And
so
I'd also like to point out when that memo leaked out from the FBI when the FBI interviewed the State Department security agents. They were talking about the same thing that I talk about in the book.
The memo that leaked out was that these agents absolutely these were professionals that were guarding that are assigned to the security detail for the Secretary of State, and they also work with other people at the State Department. But they normally that's a post that goes to senior agents. Is that right? And the senior agents all refused to protect Hillary because she was such a witch, for lack of a better word.
That's exactly
so, what kind of mistreatment did you specifically witness?
So, I'll start with what she did to me, and this kind of goes along with, you know, you have to kind of use your thought process here. You know, one of the big scandals right now is her email server. You know, her lack of ability to secure classified information. So let's back up to 1994. And I'm standing outside my post outside the Oval Office, and she comes up and starts berating me because I won't let her bring 40 tourists, 40 visitors from Arkansas that are there to visit her. She wants to leave them in the Oval Office while the president's not there by themselves, and it can't be done. It's against the law. It's against the rules that are based on national security laws of who could be in there and who can't. And she berated me. She called me an a-hole. She called the whole uniform division a bunch of a-holes.
But I mean, are people going to just say, Gary, that hey, other presidents and first ladies? I mean, they're they've got big egos too, and they want to have their way when they're at the White House.
That's called a dictatorship. That's called a dictatorship.
Well, I mean, did you witness this kind of behavior with the Bushes?
Nobody has ever. Listen, the only person that I know that kind of acted like that a little bit and actually wasn't as bad as what I'm discussing was actually a former president with LBJ. I mean, I know all the stories of the former presidents because I worked there.
I bet.
We actually learn about this stuff in training. Listen, what I'm describing to you, that's a dictator. That's somebody who lives down in South America somewhere in some little banana republic. That's not, first of all, she was only the first lady. She wasn't supposed to have a position. She was somebody who, first lady was basically an honorary position to run the East Wing, but that wasn't good enough for her because she's power hungry. Now she wants control of everything. And truly, if anybody does the research, everything that she touched while she was there went down the tubes.
You know, I actually want to ask you about that because I always joke on the program that Hillary was co-president, and
right.
And I want to ask you. I mean, what specific? I mean, like, to give me an example of that. I mean, what was something that she would do that that was different from other first ladies that you saw.
Do you remember who Lonnie Guinier was?
Sure, of course.
Right. Do you remember how radical she was?
Yeah, she was one of the aides in the part of the, wasn't she the person who originally worked on health care reform? She was in Hillary's ear about health care reform.
No, Lonnie Guinier was a person that Hillary put forward as a nominee for the Justice Department.
Okay,
and
all right.
When they started researching her, she turned out to be this crazy radical. And as soon as everybody figured out exactly who she was, all of a sudden Hillary had to back off and act like she hardly knew her. Kind of what you see with Uma Abedin right now.
Well, I got those clips. Hey, so Gary, do you mind? Can I hold you over to the next segment? Do you have a few more minutes for me? Because we're just getting started, and this is so good. And I just want to remind listeners. Okay, Gary Burney was outside the Oval Office, saw Bill and Hillary Clinton up close. We're in the last week of this election, and I think what you have to say, Gary, is important. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. Thanks, Gary, for coming on, and we'll talk to you in a minute. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
We're committed to bringing you the show every night, rain or shine. We're like the post office, but, before the Democrats took control of it. Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC, and I am talking to Gary Byrne, who is the retired Secret Service officer who was stationed right outside the Oval Office during Bill Clinton's tenure in the White House. And Gary, are you there?
I am.
Perfect. Hey, thanks for hanging in with us here. So now Podesta really is in the eye of the storm right now. You brought him up. I was going to get to him, and the reason. So, in the book, first of all, look. I mean, any organization. I'll start here. Any organization. It's always the culture of that organization is determined by the guy at the top. And you write in your book extensively about just how morally bankrupt Bill Clinton was. Was everybody in the White House just like him? I mean, or were there some good people?
Absolutely. Leon Panetta was a great guy, very nice man from California. He was a good congressman. You know, I used to tell myself, when he was much younger, and so was I, that he was the Democrat that if I ever ran for office, I could consider office of the presidency, I could consider voting for him. There were some other,
serving under Obama, and I mean, he's been around for a long time, but he was a good guy.
Yeah. Nobody, listen, we're all humans. We're all fallible, but he was a good, decent guy. He had a nice family. I remember Podesta. I used to see him all the time. He worked. Podesta's office was on the ground floor of the White House, across from the Navy mess. We used to be the barbershop. His office was in that space. I used to see him all the time. I used to see Jennifer Palmieri.
So just to finish it, I mean, so you have Podesta, who's a good guy. I know you talk about, ironically, you talk about Dick Morris and what a tool he was. Even though Morris was a Republican, and I think one of the only real sort of Republicans in the Clinton White House in that era. Why didn't you like Morris? I mean, what was your observation of him?
It's not really that I didn't like him. I didn't really, when you work there, you're in the uniform division, you're in the Secret Service, it's not our job to like or dislike anybody, it's just our job to protect them. It's not that I disliked them, it's that it became ironic when I found out why. We used to see him all the time coming in late at night. He'd come in on the West Wing side, he'd walk past the Oval Office and go over to the mansion, and every time we had to show him how to get there, and somebody had to help him go over to the residence. We found out later on, when I was researching my book, and I read Leon Panetta's book, I found out through Leon Panetta's book, what Morris was doing is he was going over there and meeting with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, and they were basically whatever the Panetta and President Clinton had decided to do in the daytime, then Morris was in there at night like circumventing the government and teaching them how to do this triangulation thing so they could win the next election. And basically he was kind of circumventing what the Chief of Staff Panetta was doing during the daytime. And I didn't realize it. Who knew what was going on? It really wasn't our business. But when when I researched my book and I saw, Panetta talked about what was going on, he found out later on. And it fell right into place.
Well, it was all politics. I mean, the Clintons were politicking instead of managing the country. And
right,
so,
that's exactly right. And see, that's my fear. That's one of the things I want your listeners to understand. It's one of the reasons I wrote my book, Crisis of Character. Because at the time, have no doubt in your mind, when the country elected Bill Clinton president, you got Bill and Hillary. If a Hillary Clinton gets elected, you're going to get Hillary and Bill. And he had 19 scandals, in 8 years. They didn't have time to govern. I mean, look at all the things they could have done, and they didn't. And
well, Hillary, I agree with you. I mean, I think that's a great point. If Hillary's elected with all this over her, she will be crippled from day one, even before she's sworn in. So
right. They could end up being the first married couple to both be president and both impeached. Think about that.
Well, if that isn't true love, I don't know what is.
I know.
All right. So I gotta ask you about one particular moment here really quick in the few seconds we have remaining.
Sure.
Drudge broke the story on Monica Lewinsky, right? I mean, we know how all that happened. Story breaks, and you felt sick. Would have felt comeuppance if I were you. I would have felt like, Bill got what he deserved. Why did you feel sick?
Yeah, because I knew what was going to happen. I had seen what happened to one of my coworkers, Hank O'Neill, when he got involved in the Vince Foster death. And I knew what was going to happen. I could see, as soon as the story broke, I could see in my mind's eye that this investigation was going to come forward and Judge Starr was going to run over top of anybody he had to. And I knew that they would eventually figure out that the uniform division officers and the agents knew what they wanted to know. And they were going to hammer it together. And they did.
Yep, got it. Well, Gary, hey, I really appreciate you being on, and really, the book is excellent. I read it.
Thank
it was
you.
A total page-turner. Listeners, gotta get this book. Gary J. Byrne, Crisis of Character. It's fantastic. And Gary, thanks for being on. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
We are on our way.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And there's some late-breaking news here this evening. Fox News is reporting that a indictment, the case against the Clinton Foundation is moving toward a likely indictment. And Fox, there's a few things that they're saying, and this is just fresh, kind of hot off the presses here. So the Clinton investigation, apparently, the foundation investigation, is a lot more expansive than anybody's reported so far. And it's been going on for over a year. So that's interesting, because we haven't heard that before. We haven't heard that it was the Clinton Foundation that's being investigated. In fact, I think earlier in the week, or even at the end of last week, there was a report that any efforts by the FBI to investigate the Clinton Foundation were squashed by Loretta Lynch. So that apparently is not true, and it's being investigated. The other bit of news here is that the laptops of Clinton aides Cheryl Mills, right, we've heard a lot about her, and Heather Samuelson, have not been destroyed. That's huge, because we've heard all about their laptops getting shredded and thinking, well, sayonara, that's it. Not true. And agents from the FBI currently are combing through them. Now, apparently also these investigators have interviewed several people twice, and they plan to interview some for a third time. I'll tell you why that's important. You know, well, first of all, as an attorney, I'll tell you, when you interview somebody once, you get a story. You interview them a second time, you get another story. Third time, you get a third story. I'm telling you, especially when people are, yes, what's it? Lying. Exactly. So, I think, you know, it's a common investigative tactic. This is why you never talk to the cops, right? Yeah, any good lawyer is going to tell you don't talk. You want to give one story and that's it. But they're obligated to cooperate here with the FBI, and unless they start pleading the fifth, they're going to keep telling versions of the same lie, and it's not going to be good. Also, agents, and this is crazy, have found emails believed to have originated on Hillary Clinton's secret server on Anthony Weiner's laptop. We talked about that, but these emails are definitely not duplicates. So they're not duplicate emails. You hear Hillary saying that all the time, right? They're duplicate emails. Now, the final thing here that I think is important to report is that the FBI, the sources from within the FBI, can say with 99% accuracy that Hillary Clinton's server has been hacked by at least five foreign intelligence agencies and that information has been taken from it. This is devastating. And why? Well, it's a broken record. All we hear all the time, well, we haven't proven anything, that there's no damage done, right? The whole, hey, you've heard it, Hillary Clinton stump speech. Hey, you know, I mean, I made a mistake. And almost like, what difference does it make now, right? We've heard those words too. It's painfully obvious. Think about it this way. When she's using that email address and she's communicating with all these different people, that email address gets on the radar of spies. Spies' jobs, I hate to break, I'd be this simple about it. But a spy's job is to find stuff out. Like Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, instead of using a .gov email address, is using this goofy, you know, HRC, you know, 12 at Clinton.com or whatever it was. And they're going to take that email address, and they have ways, and they start to try to break into it with that email address, because that's the way it works. Well, yeah, that's the login name, and then all you need is a password. And with Hillary, I mean, gosh knows, she probably has the stupidest password in the whole world. You know, any email, any password can be broken. It's not about the password. You have to have other actual protections that protect that, you know, that server. And so here it is. I mean, with this scope of this investigation opening up, heck, I mean, even if she wins this thing, Just like, you know, I keep saying this, she's heavily compromised. And it comes back to those emails. Those emails are in the hands of foreign actors, and those emails will be used against her. If she's president, she's going to get blackmailed. Plain and simple. All right, we'll be back after this. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like the apple emoji. You know, they took away the pistol and replaced it with a squirt gun. That's exactly an example of liberal idiocracy.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
One of the biggest insurance companies in Great Britain is now using social media to analyze the personalities of car owners in order to set the price of their insurance. Now, I talked to Sweet James about this, and he said, yeah, no duh. Because, and I, you know, this is very interesting. One of the first things he told me you need to do right after you get into a car accident is kill all of your social media, like right away. Because you know what insurance companies do? Yeah, you think that they're worried about you. You think that they're actually, you know, going to help you out, pay your medical bills, get your car fixed. No, they are literally taking whatever information they can about you and plugging it into their computer system, which automatically goes to, it scours social media to find information about you that will help show that, hey, look, Susie's at Disneyland, and she claimed that yesterday she was hurt in a car accident. That is literally how it works. So you know what? Don't trust those guys, all right? What do? You got to call a lawyer that's going to protect you, a lawyer that's going to have your back. And that lawyer is Sweet James Bergner. So give him a call, 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. Or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC. Talking about the election, I got to tell you, well, the breaking news aside of this, apparently investigation has been open for about a year into the Clinton Family Foundation, a.k.a. the Clinton Crime Family Foundation. So we'll see what comes of that. More bad news. And Hillary has done it again. This is the most amateur hour mistake any politician can make. What am I talking about? I'll tell you. You remember the basket of deplorables? Remember that nonsense? Hillary's done it again. So she's at a rally. Some goofball in the crowd raises a sign, you know, and with Bill Clinton's a rapist, which he is, and then shouts it, Bill Clinton's a rapist, and here's Hillary keeps talking. By the way, she's hoarse as can be. She keeps talking, and here's what she says.
And you know, I am sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump.
I've been listening to the news all day, and I've not heard one person explain it like this. You don't attack the voters and supporters of a candidate, Hillary. You attack the candidate. You do not. Are you running for president? Hello? If you're running for president, you want votes from voters, so you don't put down the voters. Regardless, I don't care if they're voters that are voting for Trump. I don't care if they're Trump's most ardent supporters. You attack the candidate. I mean, no. See, this is where Bill Clinton, yeah, love him or hate him, consummate professional politician. He never would have done this. And it's not even a question that it happened here, but it happened... It happened with the basket of deplorables comment, and she went into a 2-week tailspin. And I predict again, this is getting coverage, and I predict it will continue getting some coverage in the days ahead. But she just doesn't have 2 weeks to recover from a tailspin. Woman's got 6 days, and really, honestly, I mean, not since the Titanic in the North Atlantic has there been a ship taking on water at the same rate of speed as Hillary's campaign. You know what? I would tell you what, Podesta better start inflating the life rafts. I wonder what those emails are saying now. You know what? Politics is a dirty business, and you read these emails that are out there, and you realize you kind of start to see how the sausage is made, you know, and it's ugly. But you realize there's so many people giving her advice. There's all these people in her ear, and then she says this again and again and attacks voters. Not only is she an idiot, but she's surrounded by idiots. These people are a bunch of dummies and amateurs. All right. take a profit timeout. Be back right after this. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation. You know, by the way, you know things are going well for the Trump campaign when CNN. What do? They start talking about Malaysian Flight 370. You remember when? I'm not kidding. I went to CNN.com and that's popped up as the lead story this morning. And I thought, well, if this isn't a capitulation, first they fired Donna Brazile and now this. Well, speaking of people getting dumped, poor Huma. Yeah, you know, Gary Byrne, who was on the show earlier, he alluded to this. And I'll refer to another author, Ed Klein, who, too, is a thorn in the Clinton side. Edward Klein, he has written a number of books on the Clintons, and in one of his latest... Now, they're just releasing some excerpts of this new book on Hillary. And it details in it a scene how Hillary Clinton was at her home in Chappaqua, and she's massaging Huma Abedin's shoulders at this intimate get-together. She's giving her a little back rub. And people there were uncomfortable, like really uncomfortable. And Clinton's swirling some Chardonnay. She's day drinking. Massaging Huma Abedin's shoulders. Talks about, Klein gets into how Chelsea has just got this weird relationship, right, with Huma. Treats her with undisguised contempt. But only, by the way, only when her mother isn't around. And so you know what's interesting, right? So the story, meanwhile, breaks that Huma, you know, who's married still to that idiot Anthony Weiner, that it ends up being her laptop that was, you know, Anthony is using to sext some underage gal, right? And now the laptop has all the emails on it. So what does Hillary do? Well, she talks about it on the campaign trail. And she says this.
For those of you who are concerned about my using personal email, I understand. And as I've said, I'm not making excuses. I've said it was a mistake and I regret it. And now they apparently want to look at emails of one of my staffers. And by all means, they should look at them.
What? One of my staffers? Huma. Hey, honey, you just got dumped. I mean, you went from Hillary's main squeeze to a staffer. Look, listen. I don't care. You might love Hillary. You might want to vote for her. She might be the. Well, you're probably not. You're holding your nose. But at any rate, you may like Hillary. Might end up voting for her. You know that what just came out of her mouth is a total lie. It's a deliberate lie. Meant to reduce Huma's role for the very specific reason for Hillary to distance herself from whatever fallout is about to go down. To me, I'm telling you again, like, you know, when I have people that testify like this, when I'm in court and I got somebody who's saying this kind of thing and they're trying to push somebody out of the way and I know that that person is close to them, I know that I'm getting close to something. I know I'm getting close to something because they're trying to get that. They're trying to distance themselves and create, you know, yeah. And that is typical Clinton playbook, by the way. The minute somebody, you know, you get somebody in trouble and it's on you, just dump them. All right, we got the Kings tomorrow, and we'll be back on Friday. Go Kings, go! Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Talk Radio
7790 KABC.